budget and the income's low and the expenses of the gifts you want to buy is high. I want you to think about when you have that family get-together and you just know some of the drama in your family is going to be rehashed and it's giving you so much anxiety, you're physically ill before that get-together. I want you to think about when conflict rears its ugly head at the holiday seasons, or when the hurts that happened at past holidays seem amplified, seem pushed to the nth degree because Christmas rolls around. Sure, it's funny in the movies when everything goes wrong at Christmas, but it's really not funny when you feel like everything goes wrong in your life. And it feels so much worse at Christmas time, doesn't it? I know that many of you have been there before, and I know that there are things that happen that really hurt. We start thinking about those loved ones that we've lost. We start thinking about people that we're not able to celebrate with this season, and a million other reasons that sometimes the holidays, Christmas time especially, doesn't quite seem so merry. But if you ever think, no one feels the way I do, no one can understand where I'm at, no one's ever felt like I do, well, I'd be tempted to tell you to take a look at the way the Gospel of John begins. John highlights the real reason for light and celebration in our Advent season. And when he begins his gospel, when John begins writing his take on how Jesus entered this world, he uses a little bit of poetry. And John can do this and reflect about what does it mean to be joyful and what does it mean to have light, because John was living in a world that was far from ideal. John was living in a time that was anything but perfect. John was living when Christ came. But John could see the world around him and say, this had better be one super Messiah. Because things weren't all right. Things weren't just ho-ho holly and in harmony. Things weren't wonderful. The reality of the Jewish people at the time of Jesus' birth was that they were living in an occupied area. There was a foreign army, a foreign government, a foreign power in place again. Time and time again in the Old Testament, we read about how the Medes or the Persians or the Babylonians or whatever group have you came and overpowered and took control. And they would then set regulations around worship, and they would then set regulations around taxes and how you could act and where your land was and what freedoms you had. And this happened through the Old Testament. And at the time of the New Testament, this was once again the case. Only the problem was, it seemed to be the longest lasting occupation. It seemed like it would never end. And it seemed like maybe this Roman occupation, these Roman rulers, were just a little bit more cruel than before. They were in danger of losing the ability to worship in the temple. They hadn't yet, but that was definitely a threat on the horizon. Think of how bad that would feel if you were told, sorry, you're not allowed legally to go and worship in your church. They were in danger of being accused for any given crime if they made so much as a little murmur of disruption to the Roman occupation. This is where the Jewish people found themselves. There was some ridiculous census that was happening. Everybody had to travel back by whatever means necessary to their homeland for the census. You could say that John, as he was looking back and writing about this time when Jesus came, would have been feeling fairly blue. John might just have been waiting for God to do something as he felt like he was standing at the threshold of hell. But he writes this at the beginning of the Gospel of John, chapter 1, verse 1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him, nothing was made that has been made. In him, Jesus, was life. And that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. So again, when John writes this, This is not like a literal instruction. This is not something to be taught and to memorize and to say, okay, this is exactly how it worked. John was writing in a form of poetry. He was trying to express what it was that stepped into the world. He was trying to find words, what he really couldn't find words for, but he did his best to encompass what God did. How did God step into the world? How did God step maybe into his life when everything seemed wrong? And he chooses the words, in him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. He uses the imagery of life and light in the midst of a very dark time. John was likely the last gospel written, and it was likely written after Jesus' life. So in other words, John wrote this not as it was happening, but looking back on it. Again, who could truly have understood when that baby was born what was going on? Who could have known how the story would have ended, that Jesus would have been sacrificed, but raised a new life? John didn't know all that at the time. He couldn't have written this type of poetry to describe the amazing thing God did at the time. But looking back on what John probably would have said was a very disturbing time, a time where hope was just about snuffed, a time where people said, yeah, yeah, God's going to send the Messiah. You know what? It hasn't happened. It's not going to happen. Our life is pretty miserable. The government that's in power is miserable. Why have hope? John looks back on what God did, and he writes this. John writes about life, and he writes about light. And not just the light he found, and not just the light for his neighbors, and not just the light for the government that was in power, but the light of all mankind. Poetry, not necessarily instruction. Looking back, not written at the time, John finds hope in the midst of despair. See, one of the things about Advent, one of the key characteristics I remember, is exactly how much extra light there is. When we look at the Advent season and we think about it, what do we have at home? We have lights on our Christmas trees, okay? We have lights on the exterior of our houses, like to 1.21 gigawatts worth of lights. You can drive around and see Christmas lights. In the church, we have candles. In the church, we have more candles. By the time we're done with Advent season, we're just going to light the church on fire. Trustees, don't worry. Not really doing that. But that's one of the things that we call to mind when we think about Advent is all the extra light. You get lights that represent the star. You get people that have big stars, they light up over their houses. You have other churches that have candelabras as far as the eye can see. It's the idea that there's light. And why do we do this thing with light? It's because John reminded us that even when things are really, really dark, don't forget, Jesus stepped into the world. Jesus brought life. And that life that was brought was the light of all mankind. And so in his time, he was saying there is light in the darkness. And for our time, John says, there is light. And we light these lights, not just because, oh, it looks really nice. But we light them to remind us that there is a greater light. And it outshines the darkness. And the darkness cannot overcome it. So when you see the Advent lights this season, don't let them just be a decoration for you. Let them be a reminder to you. You can admire them and you can say, oh, I've got the new laser lights that dance on the side of the house, fine. But I want you to see deeper than that. When we talk about Advent and when you think of what's good and what is not so good, the temptation is to let what's not so good be the dominant story. The temptation is to say, well, it's painful thinking about this, and this happened, and I can remember this, and it's tempting to let that overcome everything. But I'm asking you, when you see the lights, when you see the candlelight, the artificial lights, the LED lights, whatever lights you have, let those remind you of the true light that entered into the world and gave life to everyone. Because here's the thing. John says, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. And that's easy to prove in the physical realm, that darkness cannot overcome light. So can we kill the lights in the house here? Can we do that real fast? Fantastic. Thank you. Here's a question, and I need you to answer this for me because I'm not sure. From your perspective, even all the way in the back, are you still able to see the lights that are lit? How about in the back? Can you still see the lights that are lit? How big would the sanctuary have to be for the darkness in it to swallow these lights? What, double this size? No, like 10 times this size? No. Darkness cannot overcome light. I suppose you can get to the point where physically you're so far away you don't see the light, but if you take a flashlight into the absolute darkest place imaginable and shine it, the darkness will lose every time. The light will overcome it. That's the way it works in the physical world. Thank you. We can have the lights back, or we can leave them off. I'm neutral. But that's the way it works in the physical world. Darkness cannot overcome light. Light wins every time. It is the exact same way in the spiritual realm. When we talk about Christ, darkness cannot overcome him. Darkness cannot overcome the light of Jesus. Whatever you're facing, whatever you think about, whatever bad memories are there, whatever mishaps you encounter, they cannot overcome the light that is in Jesus Christ. So whether that is Christmas time marking the death of a loved one, yes, that hurts. But that's not the Advent story, and that's not the final story. Maybe you're dealing with physical pain. You know, this year Christmas isn't going to be the same. I have this pain, and I'm just struggling to overcome it. Again, yes, that's real, and yes, that hurts. But that's not the greater story of what happened. Maybe you're thinking because of the military or because of other circumstances, there are loved ones that you're separated from, and that's lonely. And again, yes, that's lonely. But that's not the end of the story. And that's not the ultimate story of the Advent season. Maybe you have bad memories or even sad memories of something that happened at past holidays. Maybe you're overwhelmed by finances. Again, those things are realities that we face. But they are not the ultimate reality. They are not the dominant story. Those items of darkness cannot overcome the light that God sent into the world. Those things are real and they're far from ideal, but none of that can overcome the light of Jesus Christ, the light that God sent into the world, the light that God sent to offer life to us. And I always remind you, not just life, but life to the fullest. Our hope is in something greater. It's caught up in the life of Christ, which is life lived with and for God. I know I hate sometimes walking into a dark place. There's some places you get comfortable with. It doesn't matter if there's light or not, you're fine. There's some places where it's dark and it's eerie. The first about 6 months that I'm in a church, if I can't figure out where the lights are and I walk in and it's dark, it's like, it just feels weird. If there are Legos anywhere on a floor and I'm walking in and it's dark, okay? I know what it's like to go into a dark place and to be a little bit uneasy. But I can also tell you, any dark place that someone's willing to give me a light to go into, I feel that much better automatically. God has given us a light. And even if you say, I am in the darkest place I have known ever, right now, then I have a word of hope for you. God sent Jesus Christ because he loves you so much that he wants to offer you light beyond any darkness that you know this holiday season. When the big picture of the light of Jesus is our focus, there is nothing that can overcome it. See, John was reflecting back when he wrote his gospel, and he said, and the darkness has not overcome it. He was looking back, but his wording was interesting. He didn't say, and at that time, the darkness did not overcome Jesus. He said, even to current day in John's life, even as I write this, that light was sent, and the darkness has not overcome it. That ruling empire has not overcome it. Any threat has not overcome it. Any physical difficulty that I have faced, John was writing, has not overcome the light of Christ. Maybe you've heard it put in these terms before, that sometimes we're pressed, but we're not crushed. We're persecuted, but we're not abandoned. We're knocked down, but we're not destroyed. In Jesus Christ, there was life. And that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness will not overcome it. As we begin the Advent season, and I want to talk about setting the tone, in all honesty, I want to do it in this way. Let Jesus be the light that you center all your Advent hopes on. Not on what gifts you're going to get. Not on having the money to get those gifts. Not on which relative or loved one that you'll get to see and which one you won't get to see. Not on how good you feel. And hey, I'm telling you right now, 4 weeks straight with this cold, I'd love to be feeling better. And I know that some of you deal with pain beyond that. But don't center your hopes on any of those things. Center your hopes, just like this Advent wreath is centered, on the light of Christ. And this will be the best reason you will ever have to celebrate. Would you pray with me?